Please be seated. Well, let me echo Marjorie's welcome at the beginning of the service. We're so grateful that you're here with us on this All Saints Sunday. This is a really important day in the life of the church. All Saints Day is one of the principal feasts in the church year. And one of the reasons why it's so important is because today we remember and proclaim a central belief for us, and that's our belief in the communion of the saints. In fact, in the baptism, when Revere's baptized in just a few minutes, as part of that liturgy, we are going to reaffirm our own baptismal covenants, reaffirm our own faith, and what we will do is we will say together, as part of that, we believe in the communion of the saints. So, to get a better sense of what today is about and to prepare us for that proclamation that we're going to make, I want to talk to us about the communion of the saints. What does it mean? What does it mean that we believe in this communion? And why does it matter for our lives as Christians? So to start, let's look at the word saint, the communion of the saints. Now, when we use the word saint, we can use it in a few different ways. Sometimes we use it casually. Somebody does something for us and we say, "You are such a saint." Or, "Let me tell you what John did for me. He is a saint." When we use it that way, we're referring to people in our own lives who are better than us. They are examples of goodness and faithfulness. Another way we can use the word saint is thinking about the big saints, the saints with the capital S in the church's history. So St. Francis, St. Teresa, St. Peter. Again, we're looking back in the past to those who are examples for us, those who have lived out the Christian life in a way that is better than we're living out. And so we look to them as an example. Now, those two ways of using the word saint are valid, but what we need to know is that when the New Testament uses the word saint, it uses it differently. It's not talking about just the best Christians, but when the New Testament uses the word saint, it's referring to all Christians. So Paul, in his letters, he will address the saints, so he'll write to the church in Ephesus, to the saints in Ephesus. And when he writes that, he's saying, "I'm writing to all the Christians in Ephesus, not just the best Christians, but all the Christians." He writes to the saints in Corinth. Again, he's writing to all the Christians in Corinth. And the idea here is that to be a Christian is to be set apart. It's to be made holy or whole by God in Christ. And so that those who have entered into relationship with God through Christ, they can be called saints. I think a helpful way to think about this more inclusive use of the word saints is to think about the Latin word sonare. A sonare is closely related to the root word for saint. And sonare in Latin means to be healed. Doesn't mean to be better than someone else. Doesn't mean to be perfect by your own merit. No, it means to be healed. And really, that's what the Christian journey is all about. It's about becoming whole, becoming healed. Rowan Williams, the previous Archbishop of Canterbury, he has a great description of what it means to be a saint, and I think this is on the slides. But this is what he writes. He says, "The greatness of a saint lies not in their perfection, but in their readiness to be vulnerable, to be questioned, judged, and left speechless by God." Great quote, right? To be a saint is someone who has consented to this process, consented to God's presence, allowing God in so that God can judge us, heal us, and transform us. I think another helpful metaphor is to think of stained glass windows. Think of a church with stained glass windows, like the nave with the rose window. What makes a stained glass window beautiful? Well, it's the light that shines through it. If you go into a church at night with stained glass windows, you can't see the windows. They're black, and you have a hard time making out the shapes and the depictions in the windows. But you walk in on a sunny day, and it's a completely different experience because those windows have been transformed. That light is shining through them and revealing. Really, that's what the light's doing. It's revealing what those windows were created to show. And again, that's a saint. Someone who has let the light of God shine through their life so that they become who God created them to be. Now again, everything we're saying here is what it means to be a Christian. To be a Christian means you've encountered the love of God in Christ, and then you trust in this love. You trust in this light, and you let this love into your life. And of course, there are some who are further along in this journey than others, but regardless how far you've progressed, once this process has begun, you are a saint because God is working in you, making you whole and healed. So when we use the word saint today, we're using it in this inclusive sense. We're talking about all Christian believers. Now, the second word to reflect on is this word, communion. We believe in the communion of the saints. Now, this word, communion, it speaks to the fact that we do this work of healing, this work of consenting to God's presence. We do it as part of a family. We don't do it alone. You know, one thing that we as Christians always need to remember is that we belong to a family bigger than we can fathom. You and I have sisters and brothers all over the world. They have no shared language except the language of the gospel. They have no shared socioeconomic status or race. Right? You and I belong to a family of faith that goes well beyond what we see here. All over the world, again, in different languages, in different contexts, in different styles, men and women, our brothers and sisters, are preaching the gospel of Christ. They're responding to God's love. They're sharing in communion. And they're engaging in this work of healing. We are part of a massive family. And more than this, and this is an amazing promise, we're told that this community that we're a part of, it extends beyond earthly life. Now, I'll say here, you know, this is, I think, a hard concept for our culture to grasp or believe in because we live in a materialistic culture, a secular culture that believes all that there is what's in front of us. And so when we start to talk about relationships with the dead, it doesn't fit with our culture. But that's what we proclaim, and that's what we believe. We believe that this community, the community of the saints, is held together by God. And because God holds this community together, these relationships don't end with death. I mean, God is stronger than death. The cross proved that. And so his relationships with us, they extend beyond the grave. And therefore, by extension, we remain in relationship with those who have died in the faith because we're in relationship with God. God holds us together. We are part of a massive community comprised of the living and the dead. We read from the book of Revelation today, and John gives us a picture of this family. And this will show up on your slide. This again was from our reading from Revelation. John says this, "After this, I, John, looked, and there was a great multitude that no one could count, from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and languages, standing before the throne and before the Lamb." Right, a great multitude from every tribe and every people. It should comfort us that it's a great multitude. John didn't say, well, it's a small group of people, right? It's a great multitude. And the promise is we're part of that multitude. Again, this enormous family of the living and the dead, our Christian brothers and sisters. Now, I said that in just a moment, we're going to reaffirm our belief in the communion of the saints. And it's important to notice that we're saying in that proclamation that we actually believe in this communion. Just like with Jesus, we don't believe things just about Jesus, but we believe in Jesus. We put our trust and hope in him. In the same way, we don't just believe things about the communion of the saints. We believe in the communion of the saints. So we're called to put our trust and hope in this communion. So what does that look like? What does it mean to believe in this community? One more passage for you, which should pop up on your screen. This is a quote from Max Lucado, in which he talks about trusting in the communion of the saints. He says this, "Questions and doubts can make hermits out of us, driving us into hiding. Yet the cave has no answers. Christ distributes courage through community. He dissipates doubts through fellowship. He never deposits all knowledge in one person, but distributes pieces of the jigsaw puzzle to many. When you interlock your understanding with mine and we share our discoveries, when we mix, mingle, and pray, Christ speaks." So what he's saying there is that when we have doubts, when we're hurt, when we're struggling, the human tendency is to withdraw, to isolate. But if we believe in the communion of the saints, we're not going to pull away. We're going to do the opposite. We're going to step into this community. And when we do, what we'll find is that Christ meets us here. He'll strengthen us. He'll talk to us through the communion of the saints. Another way to put this is that the tangible presence of God is most often revealed in living among the communion of the saints. We are to believe and to hope and trust in this community. Now, one last thing. We've said that we're part of this vast community instituted by God and held together by God as well. And we're supposed to believe in and invest in this community. We've also said this community comprises the living and the dead. So here's a question for us, not an easy question to answer. How is it that we are to have communion with the dead? Right? I understand how I can have a relationship and invest with my brother and sister in Christ who sits next to me in the pew. I understand what that might look like. But how do we foster communion with the saints who have gone before us? The truth is it's a hard and mysterious question to answer. And it's a hard question to answer because we don't know that much about what happens after we die. The scriptures don't tell us a lot. I mean, they do tell us, as we've said, that those who die as part of God's people are sustained by God. Couple that with Paul's remark about departing and being with Christ, and that's about as far as you can go in terms of what the New Testament teaches us about what happens after we die. So we don't know a lot. But I will say one way that we can invest in our relationship with the Christian dead is we can pray for them. We can pray for our brothers and sisters in Christ who have died. In the Reformation, there was a lot of discussion about praying for the dead. And there was a lot of concern about this. And there was valid concern. In the medieval age, most of the prayers for the dead were prayers trying to help people get out of purgatory. There was a widespread belief in purgatory. And so the thought was, well, we need to pray for these people to get them out of purgatory. Now, we don't believe in purgatory. And the Reformers also didn't believe in purgatory. And so they were concerned that this type of prayer undermined the gospel promises about salvation, salvation promised to us in Christ, undermined the assurance given to us about our salvation after death. So it was a valid concern. But there is another reason to pray for the dead. And that is because prayer, true prayer, is an act of love. Prayer is an outflowing of love. If I love someone, I will pray for them. Not because they have a particular need, but just because I want to lift them up to God. And because I believe that God works through our prayers. And so it can be an act of love, an act of communion, to pray for those who have died. In a sense, it keeps us connected to them. And so just as I pray for my children, just as I pray for my wife, Tricia, just as I pray for many of you, I pray for those who I love, who have died. And this can be a tangible reminder that death is not the last word, that the divide between the living and the dead is not as absolute as we think it is, because we are held together by God. So the communion of the saints, that is what we celebrate today and proclaim. We proclaim that we are one of the crowd. We are part of this great family united with God, composed of the living and the dead. And as we are part of this community, we discover that God is slowly but surely healing us and making us whole. That's what it means to believe in the communion of the saints.